Okay, I'm going to read appendix number 2. The following additional text, found in 3 manuscripts and 4 printed editions, occurs between text 22.1 and 22.2. I'm checking something here. This is, no, it's a separate file. You don't have it.
A madre of Rata Kondi. Stri Shudra Dvija Banduna Traina Shruti Gochara Karma Shreyasi Murdanam Shreya Evam Bhavediha Iti Bharatam Akhyanam Kripaya Munina Kritam Iti Vakyam Sri Bhagavati Yatwen Otapya Bharatasya Vedarta Tulya Twena Vishishya Nirnayo Krita Iti Tan Matanusarena Tvevam Vyakyayam Bharatasya Vinirnayo Vedarta Tulya Twena Vishishya Nirnayo Yatreti. In Hemandri's Vratakunda, this verse is cited as belonging to Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. The 3 Vedas should not be heard by women Shudras and unqualified members of Brahmin families, so that such less intelligent people can perfect their lives in this world. By perfecting their performance of fruitive work, the great sage mercifully compiled the narration of Mahabharata. Hemadri then goes on to specifically ascertain that the Mahabharata's message is equivalent to that of the Vedas. In accordance with his opinion, we can thus explain the praise Bharatartha Vinirnaya in the passage of the Guru Purana cited in text 21.1 as meaning, quote, in which the Mahabharata is ascertained, or in other words, in which its message is ascertained to be equivalent to that of the Vedas. Yasmad evam bhagavat paras tasmad eva yatradi kritya gayatrim iti krita lakshana shri bhagavat nama grantaha shri bhagavat paraya gayatriya bhashya rupo sau turuktam yatradi kritya gayatrim ityadi tatayvahi agnipurane tasya Vyakyane Shri Bhagavan Eva Vistarena Pratipaditaha Tatra Tadiya Vyakya Digdarshanam Yata Tadyotik Paramam Brahma Bargas Tejo Yatatsmitaha Ityarabhya Punar Aha Tadyotik Bhagavan Vishnur Jagajanmadi Karanam Shivam kechit patanti sma shakti rupam vadanti cha kechit suryam kechit agnim daivatani agni hotrinaha. I see a mistake. Okay. Spelling mistake, yeah. Fixed. Agnyadi rupi vishnur hi vedadao brahmagiyate. Because the book named Bhagavata is thus dedicated to Bhagavan. It is characterized by the words where the Gayatri Mantra is a focus of discussion. It serves as a commentary on the Gayatri, which itself is dedicated to Sri Bhagavan. This much is said in the words beginning, where the Gayatri Mantra is the focus of discussion. Whoa, we just changed a focus to the focus. Well, I had to make it a focus again. I don't want to confuse everybody. Okay. And similarly, in the explanation of the Gayatri in the Agni Mantra, in the Agni Purana, it is Sri Bhagavan who is established at length. We will give a brief survey of this explanation given in the Agni Purana. In the passage beginning, it is the supreme light, which is Brahman, inasmuch as the word Bhargas means light in the Smriti scriptures. There is the further statement, that light is the supreme Lord Vishnu, who is the cause of the birth and so on of the created universe. Some have interpreted this light to be Lord Shiva, and others say that it is a form of Lord Shiva's Shakti. Some worshippers of the sacrificial fire say that it is the sun god, some the fire god, and others various demigods, other demigods. Actually, however, Lord Vishnu himself is glorified in the Vedas and subsequent scriptures as assuming the form of the fire god and all others. Atra janmadyasya ityasya vyakyanam chattata darshayishyate kasma yena vibhashito yam iti upasamhara vakye cha tatchudham ityadi samanam evagni purane tadvyakyanam nityam shudham param brahma nitya bhargam adishwaram aham jyoti param brahma dhyaye mahi vimuktaye iti. Of course, this is commentary on the Gayatri Mantra in the Agni Purana. In this regard, we will also set forth an explanation of the verse of the Bhagavatam beginning Janmadyasya. And in the Bhagavatam's concluding verse, it is said that absolute truth is pure. The Agni Purana's explanation is equivalent to both statements when it says, it is eternal and pure, the supreme Brahman. Its effulgence is eternal, and it is the supreme controller. It is my own self, the supreme light, Brahman, on which we all meditate for liberation. Atra aham brahma iti na devo devam archayet iti nyayena yogyatvaya swasya tadriktva bhavana darshita jayema iti aham tava dhyayema sarve chavayam jayema meti etyartaha. Wait, jayayam. Jayema, that's not right for aham. Let me check and see whether I copied the word wrong. Right? The first person singular form would be what? Jai, let me meditate. Jai, I don't know. Anyway, I'll check it. Jayayam, which is probably what it is. I'll have to go back and look in the book. Yaham tava jayayam. Sorry, vayamcha jayayameti. Probably correct. Tade tan mate tu mantre pi barga shabdo yam adanta evasyat. Supam suluk ityadina chandasa sutrena tu. Dutiyaika vachanasya amak subhavo geya. Yat tu dvadashe om namaste ityadi gadyeshu tadarta twena suryak stutaha tat paramatma drishtyaiva natu swatantriyen et yadoshaha. Tatayvagre shishonagavakyam bruhi nakshadadhananam vyuham suryat manohare. Here, the words, it is my own self, Brahman, show the mentality of thinking oneself non-different from Brahman in order to make oneself fit, according to the principle that one who is not godly cannot worship God. Let us worship, those words indicate, not only I should worship, but we should all worship. Following this interpretation, the word Bharga in the original mantra also should be taken here as ending in a vowel. By the grammatical sutra for Vedic language, nouns may have their subject case inflection deleted. Supam Suluk. We can understand that the object case singular inflection, has been changed into the subject case inflection. Wait a minute. Does that make sense? And then deleted? But Supam Suluk is a sutra. Yeah. Okay, but is Jiva Goswami's explanation good enough? Yeah, that's part of it. Wait, but I have here Supam Su hyphen look. Is that wrong? Okay. When, however, in the prose passage of the 12th canto beginning with Om Namaste, the sun is praised as what the Gayatri mantra refers to, there is nothing wrong, because this praise is from the viewpoint of seeing the sun as the Supreme Soul. Thus, later in the 12th canto, Sri Shonaka says, "Please describe to us, who have great faith in your words, the personal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari in his feature as the presiding deity of the sun." Then continuing, "Na chasya bhargasya surya mandala matradi shtana twam mantri varinya shabdina atraja grante para shabdina paramaishvarya paryantataya darshitatvat tadevam agnipurani pyuktam dhyanena purushoyam cha drashtavyak surya mandale satyam sada shivam brahma tadvishno padamam padam iti triloki jananam upahasanartam pralaye vinashani suryamandale chantar yamitaya pradubhuto yam purusho dhyanena drashtavya upasitavya ha yatu vishno tasya mahavaikunta rupam padamam padam tadeva satyam kalatraya avyabhichari Sadashivam upadravas shunyam yato brahmasarupam ityartaha. Nor is this effulgence located only in the sphere of the sun, because the word most excellent is used in the mantra, which is further shown in this text of the Agni Purana to extend its meaning to the supreme powers of the personality of Godhead. Thus it is also said in the Agni Purana, "By meditation one should see this supreme person within the globe of the sun. He is the eternally real, always auspicious, absolute truth, which is the supreme position of Lord Vishnu." This statement indicates that to facilitate the meditational worship of the inhabitants of the three worlds, this supreme person appears as the Supersoul within the globe of the sun when the sun is being destroyed during the annihilation of the universe. He should be seen, worshipped by meditation. And on the other hand, the supreme position of Lord Vishnu, namely his Mahavaikunta, is eternally true, unchanging in all three phases of time. It is always auspicious, devoid of disturbance, because it is the very self of Brahman. And yes. Yeah. It says mediation and not meditation? Well, okay, that means you should call Vrajabihari to mediate, okay? Okay, meditational worship, okay.
Where was that part about the sun being destroyed?
Sun being destroyed, well, I think maybe I got something wrong there. Where is it? Oh, Vinashini, pralaye vinashini. It's not when, it's the sun which is destroyed. It's not that you wait till the universe is destroyed to worship the sun, but it's just you worship the sun which gets destroyed. Yeah, within the globe of the sun. Well, which is destroyed? How's that? That's my mistake. It hasn't been edited yet. I can't blame anybody else for this. This Supreme Person appears as a super soul within the globe of the sun, which is, I saw it also, you know, but I didn't say anything, but, which is destroyed during the annihilation of the universe. How's that? Because you can worship the Supreme Lord in the sun, but that object, you know, that focus of attention is going to be destroyed. If you worship Vishnu in Mahavaikuntha, his Mahavaikuntha is not going to get destroyed. So, take your pick. Okay. Yes.
What was that thing about Jayama that we were wondering about?
What?
So up there, we were wondering about Jayama. Was it the correct form or not?
Because I have Jayama, Aham Tava Jayama, but that's plural.
Oh, yeah.
So it's Aham Tava Jayayam is probably correct, but I'll check the printed text. Right?
Jayayam.
Whatever. Well, I'll check the text to see what the text says.
I was just remembering when I did some study on the Gayatri Mantra that Sridhaswami glosses Dhimahi as Jayama. And in the next Anucheda here, then he says that Aham Tavat Jayama Save Chavayam Jayama Iti Artaha.
It's there?
Yeah. It's in Jiva Goswami says Jayama here.
Where does he say it? Back in the Anucheda?
After the verse that's quoted that we're wondering about, then in the next Anucheda he says Jayama twice.
Let's go. What file is it? Five?
No, right here in this file here, in D.
Here?
The D.
I know, I'm looking at it right now. Aham tava jayema sarve che vayam jayema ityarta. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And in the verse above that, jayema. So, yeah, it seems like it's...
But it's, why would you say aham jayema? It's like aham gachati.
Yeah.
Let me see if the text has jayema. If it has jayayam, then it's it. I copied it wrong. Okay, continue in F. Tadetad Gayatri Prochya Pranana Lakshana Prakarane Yatradi Kritya Gayatri Ityadi Api Uktam Agni Purani Tasmat. Now, there's two verses, but these verses are Jiva Goswami's own composition. This is his summary verse. Verses. Agne Puranam Gayatri Samitya Bhagavat Param Bhagavantam Tatramatva Jagad Janmadi Karanam Yatradi Kritya Gayatrim Iti Lakshana Purvakam Srimad Bhagavatam Shashvat Prithivyam Jayati Sarva Prithvi. Ah, there's an extra syllable here. Prithvyam, it would sound better. Prithvyam Jayati Sarva. Let me check that one also. Prithvi is also a correct form. Okay. So it is that, after describing the Gayatri Mantra, the words, which has the Gayatri as a focus of discussion, are said in the context of divining, well, let's say, are spoken, because you say they're said, you expect that they're said to be something. But we're just saying they're spoken. These words are spoken in the context of defining what a Purana is. Thus we understand that the Agni Purana's explanation of the Gayatri refers to the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord is said there to be the cause of the birth and so on of the material creation. Jagat Janmani Karanam. Being characterized as having Gayatri as a focus of discussion, Srimad Bhagavatam is forever victorious on the face of the earth. Those are Jiva Goswami's own words. Tadevam asya shastrasya gayatrim adikritya pravrittir darshita yattu saraswata kalpam adikrityeti purvamuktam tacha gayatriya bhagavat patipadaka vag vishesha rupa saraswati twad upayuktameva Yaruktam Agni Purani. Gayat Yuktani Shastrani Bhargam Pranas Tataivacha Tatak Smiteyam Gayatri Savitri Yata Evacha Prakashani Sa Savitur Vag Rupa Twat Sadaswati Iti Atakrama Prapta Vyakya. In this way, we have shown that this scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, begins by first focusing on the Gayatri Mantra. What was said earlier, that the Bhagavatam focuses its discussion on the day of Brahma belonging to Saraswati, is perfectly appropriate because Gayatri is a form of Saraswati as a special composition of words establishing the glories of the personality of Godhead. As it is said in the Agni Purana, Gayatri is named Gayatri in the Smriti scriptures because she sings Gayatri, the Ukta and Shastra hymns, which are the divine light and the air of life. The scriptures also call her Savitri because she reveals Savita, the sun god, and she is called Saraswati because she appears as a spiritual expression of words. Now let us return to the main commentary where we left off. Okay, that's the appendix. Now we continue. Oh, questions, comments. Yes. And how the Gayatri talks about Vishnu. And I decided not to include it in the main text because it's suspicious. There's some repetition in it. So the repeated parts can't come up twice. It's actually not there in one place or the other. Yes.
Is it the sun god is Vivasvan right now in this one mantra? Is he different from the god, or is he same as, or expansion, or how do we understand?
Well, sun god, you mean God capital G? No, I don't think any of the sun gods are Vishnu Tattva. I don't think they ever are. So he's a jiva representing God.
So Vivasan is not any expansion or anything about
not God. A Vishnu Tattva expansion.
And what we call
he's not usually listed even among the avatars, even among the Shaktivesh avatars.
And what we refer to Surya Narayana is different. He is the presiding deity, the super
soul.
Well,
you can consider that Surya Narayana as Vishnu is the super soul of the sun. How about that?
That means super soul of the super soul of sun. The super soul of sun is the...
Well... No, I mean, I just made that up, so I don't. You know, you want me to give a commentary on my own concoction? I'm not saying that the sun has a separate super soul. You know, he's there. Vishnu's there everywhere in some form or other. He's ruling the sun. He's the super soul actually rules the sun. Either he's Vivasvan's super soul, or he's right in the sun, one way or the other. Yes.
I always wanted to know about this question also. It's not much information available, at least not in our, in our own Sampradaya, because they don't get into this. But something interesting that comes in Lalita Madhava, which shows that Vivasvan and Surya Narayana are two separate personalities on the same planet. Like just like on Brahma Loka, there's Lord Brahma, and then there's the Mahapurusha as the worshipful deity of the planet.
Yeah.
So... on Surya's planet's the same as Vivasvan, and then Surya Narayana is the worshipful deity, because in Lalita Madhava, when there's the whole story how Radharani and Vishakha try and drown themselves in the Yamuna, and then the Yamuna's father, the sun god, takes them, seeing their plight, and takes them to his planet.
Yes, and Vivasvan.
Vivasvan. And then he's trying to pacify them and saying, look, here's your lord. And he takes them to see Surya Narayana there on his planet.
So in person. Bhagawan, not Paramatma, but Bhagawan in the form of Surya Narayana is living in the sun. The Upanishad said, meditate on the Purusha who's in the sun.
Wherever we come across some prayers to sun god or like glories of sun god, that there we should take, if the description is as if describing God, then we should take it as if the Surya, the Narayana who is present inside sun globe is being mentioned.
Well, okay. Yes, it's good to do that.
Like, for example...
But if... It depends. Are they Aparashaya prayers? Or are they... Somebody wrote it? And did the person who wrote it have the intention of that? Did he even know that Narayana is the real sun god?
Like, for
so if it's written by some person who doesn't even know it, then you can read it in there. That's called... not Shala, but... a pretext. What's the word? Vyaja. You can read a mundane piece of poetry and read a transcendental message into it. But, you know, the Vaishnavas do that sometimes. Even that poem by, verse by that Lord Chaitanya would recite about, you know, we're on the bank of the Reva. You know, I'm the same, you know, girl and he's the same lover, and it's supposed to be about Radharani and Krishna on the bank of the Jamuna, but the Reva is somewhere in South India. It's not the Jamuna. And this comes from a mundane, you know, Mahakavya that has nothing to do with Radha and Krishna. But the Vaishnavas, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, read it as Radha and Krishna on the bank of the Jamuna, or Radharani on the bank of the Jamuna. That's Vyaja. That's taking mundane poetry and reading a transcendental message into it. You can do that.
There is this popular prayer called Aditya Hridayam in Ramayana, where Agastya comes and gives this prayer to Lord Rama before the battle and says that you meditate on this, then victory is sure, like that. So everybody chants this Aditya Hridayam in South, yes, at least. That's the whole description of glorifying Vishnu only. But it's
about Vishnu.
Yeah,
explicitly.
Yeah, explicitly. It says many places,
yes,
so many things. But its description also says sun is there and you're situated in the middle of sun, like that, all these things.
Well, I mean, you have that in the Rig Veda, worship of the sun, and it's really worship of Vishnu. You have in the Bhavatam, Yajnavalkya, worships the sun god and offers prayers to the sun, but it's the Bhavatam. Bhavatam doesn't promote demigod worship. Yeah, so that's not a new thing. Worshipping Vishnu represented by the sun has been going on forever, and then you find it in the Rig Veda. Yes. Yes.
This is Dhyana Mantra for Gayatri.
Yes.
Whenever they chant Gayatri, so before chanting Gayatri, after the Karanyasa and all that, after the Bandhana, then there is Dhyana. And the Dhyana goes like this. It says, Prodhyad Aditya Varnascha Surya Mandala Madhyagash Chakra Shankha Tharong Kasthador Dvayo Dhyaya Yevacha Dhyaya Sada Savitra Mandala Madhyavarti Narayana Sarasijasana Sannivishtha Keyuravan Makara Kundalavan Kiriti Hari Hiranmaya Vapuhu Drita Shankha Chakraha. The meditation is that he's situated in the center of the sun, seated on a lotus, holding chakra and shankha, and he's got a golden form and wearing a garland and ornaments.
And that mantra is used almost universally. Even Mayavadis chant it, right?
While doing Surya Namaskar in the morning also.
Yes.
Before that, this Dhyaya Sada.
So the yogis mantra. Teach it?
No, when that Gurukula where I was staying, we were doing Surya Namaskar every day in the morning. And
chanting that.
And before doing Surya Namaskar, we chant this.
Okay, so yogis also chant it. Okay. And Shankaracharya, when he taught his Panchopasana, you can worship the Absolute Truth represented by five deities. Surya is one of them.
Yes. I just looked up and Suhotra Maharaj has done the conference. He was discussing that question about Surya Narayana and gave some references,
yes,
to Vishnu Purana. So he said there that there are 12 deities, and there's the original sun god, which Prabhupada identifies most of the time with Surya Narayana. He expands, he's a jiva, but he expands into 12 deities and who take turns,
yes,
throughout the year, 1 month each. And Suhotra Maharaj quotes,
yes,
Suhotra Maharaj quotes a Vishnu Purana statement saying that the power of Lord Narayana,
who enters the heart of Surya, that's why he becomes Surya Narayana, is dwelling in the chariot. As soon as they take aboard the chariot, they become empowered with the Shakti of Narayana, and they become Shakti Avesha Avataras for 1 month. At Narayana, there's also a statement, Narayana in the heart of Surya is a very special form of, as Bharatram Prabhu had just said, a golden form, but all golden mustache and two hands rather than four.
He's a special super, super soul.
Super, super soul, yeah. So that's Narayana in the heart of Surya. That's how, that's what you said, you know, the Paramatma in the heart, in Narayana.
Okay, but that means that's two reasons for Narayana, considering Narayana to be there on the sun. He's there in person by himself, but he's also empowering Surya Narayana. He's there in his avesh.
So he becomes a jiva, but he becomes, for all intents and purposes, non-different from Narayana for the particular function, manifesting his yachakshuresha savita sakala grahana, all this.
Yes.
As the eye.
Yes. Well, that's vibhuti. That's different. That's just the material opulence. The sun. That's looking at the sun just as a planet. Okay. Anything else? Or we go on to 24. Starting file number 6. Yareva kila drishtva sakshan tat shishyatam praptayar api shri madhvacharya charanayar vaishnava mate pravishya vaishnavantaranam tat shishantara punyarad adi vitika vyakya pravesha shankaya tatra tatparyantaram likadbir Vartamot padeshaha krita iti satvata varnayanti. The revered Sri Madhvacharya, Krishna's devotees recount, was in the direct disciplic succession of Shankaracharya. Jiva Goswami says it. You know, actually what he says is he's directly a disciple of Shankaracharya. I know, that's my words. But the Sanskrit just says tatshishyatam prapta. He's obtained the state of being directly a disciple. Okay? I just saw that's going to create controversy. So I modified it a little bit. I said he's in the direct disciplic succession of Shankaracharya. Even that, he's in the Brahma Sampradaya. At least the history is, he was in the Brahma Sampradaya, and the Brahma Sampradaya was influenced by Mayavadis. And his gurus were practically Mayavadis. But we're saying here, direct disciplic succession of Shankaracharya. Anyway, Jiva Goswami says it. I'll just repeat it. Yes?
I made that movie on Madhvacharya.
Yes.
So in that, it opens like this. It opens and then first there's a imaginary conversation between Narayana Panditacharya and a spectator. And then he asks in that imaginary conversation to Narayana Panditacharya, he asks questions like, how sure are you about the account that you're giving? How sure are you about the account that you're giving of Madhvacharya?
Yes.
Such questions. And one of the questions was, isn't it that Madhva was an Advaiti? So Narayana Panditacharya replies, yeah, Madhva, his father, they were all directly in an Advaita Sampradaya. That's true.
They were. Okay. So, I can say this then. The Tattvavadis won't disagree. He was in the direct disciplic succession of Shankaracharya.
Yes.
There's one devotee, Jai Tirthacharan Prabhu in New Zealand. He wrote a very extensive research on Madhvacharya's line.
Why don't we save it to the end of the Anuchheda? Okay? Let's get to the Anuchheda, then read it. Okay, after seeing Srimad Bhagavatam, however, he became an adherent of Vaishnava thought. Concerned that other Vaishnavas might be influenced by the commentaries of other followers of Shankara like Punyaranya, Srimadma wrote his own explanation of the Bhagavatam to show the correct way to understand its intended meaning. Okay, 1 second. Computer decided to take a nap. Anyway, why don't you read what you have, since... My computer shut off.
I didn't mean to read it. I just wanted to
You just wanted to comment and mention it.
Yeah, to mention that he was giving a more detailed account how the spiritual master of Madhvacharya was telling him that he had to hide his allegiance with Vaishnavas, because at that time it was very dangerous even revealing oneself to be Vaishnava.
Yes.
And him and his spiritual master were kind of Vaishnavas covertly in disguise, so to say.
Yes.
Because Buddhists were Shankarites, excuse me, at that time were very oppressive.
Yes.
Where and they would even kill Vaishnavas sometimes.
Yes.
That's what I read in his account, and there was some prediction.
Where does that account come from?
Oh, he quotes some, maybe Bharat Ramprabhu may know about the biographical references. So in other words, they did belong, but they have to force, they were forced to go into hiding, and they because of that they also forgot to a large extent the proper Siddhanta.
Okay. I'm booting up here.
Can I say another thing?
Yes, go ahead.
But as it's accounted in the Madhva Vijaya, when Madhva first heard from Vidyaranya, I forget, there's one, the first, when he heard the first introduction, even when he first became a student of Achyuta Prajna, and when he hears the introductory verse to that text of Advaita, he finds some 40 or 50 faults or something like that, just in the first verse.
Yes. Yes.
So that means that he was never an adherent of the Shankara line. But
that Madhvacharya never was?
The way it's listed here, that it won't be accepted.
Well, Hiroshima says that, I don't want to fight with it. It doesn't say when. When did he first see the Bhagavatam?
Well, his father was a Bhagavata. His father was, ever since
his childhood. Okay, so he was 2 years old or 1 year old when he saw the Bhagavatam, and then he became a Vaishnava.
In Madhva Vijaya, it's described, when his father was teaching Bhagavatam, all the demigods would come and sit and listen.
Yes. So as a very young child, he was hearing the Bhagavatam. So became a Vaishnava before he was 2 years old. It's like a number of us, of eternal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared to have been materialists or Mayavadis until Lord Chaitanya saved them, even though they're eternal associates. It's just part of the pastime. So I think we can live with this statement. Okay, hold on a second. This machine is not cooperating very well. I have to reopen the file if it lets me do it. It's wanting to go online instead. Please. Okay. Now, Tatva. Final. 6. And close this. Doesn't want to close it. Okay. Wow. Not cooperating. Thank you. But I think I can get it now. I think I got it. Okay, I got it. All right, text 24. Oh, I read the first paragraph, not the next one. Okay. Tasmad yuktam uktam tatraiva pratamaskande. Idam tadidam grahayama sa sutamatma vatambaram sarvavedeti hasanam Saram Saram Samudritam Dwadashi Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Sri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadra Samrita Triptasya Nanyatra Syadvati Kwachit. Thus the first canto of the Bhagavatam itself aptly states, Sri Vyasadeva delivered Srimad Bhagavatam to his son, the most respected among the self-realized. After extracting the cream of all the Vedic literatures and histories of the universe, and in the 12th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam is declared the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from its nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature. Tata pratame nigamakalpataror galitam phalam shukamukad amrita drava sammutam pibata bhagavatam rasam alayam muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavuka ata eva tatraiva yakswanu bhavamakila shruti saramekam adhyatma deepam atititirshitam tamondam Sangsarinam karanayaha purana guhyam tam vyasa sunum upayami guru muninam iti shri bhagavata matam tu sarva matanam adisha rupam iti suchakam. Again in the first canto, O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. And in the same canto, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge after having personally assimilated it by experience. These statements imply that the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam reigns over all others. Commentary. Srimad Bhacharya, whom the members of his sampradaya also call by his sannyas name, Ananda Tirtha, revived the Brahma sampradaya in this age. By the time of his birth in the 13th century, the Brahma sampradaya had become virtually indistinguishable from Shankara's Mayavad school. Sri Madhva's predecessors held the sannyas title Tirtha, which Madhva accepted and passed on to his disciplic descendants. Technically, however, the name is one of the 10 assigned by Shankaracharya to the sannyasis of his Advaita Sampradaya. It is not included in the traditional list of 100 names meant for Vaishnav sannyasis. Madhva, considering the monistic viewpoint of his initiating guru and other teachers unacceptable, took upon himself the mission of reestablishing the true teachings of Bhagavad Dharma as originally inculcated by Brahma, Narada, and Vedavyas. Madhvacharya named his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam the Bhagavata Tatparya Nirnaya, signifying that his intention was to show the definitive understanding of the Bhagavatam. In this work, and in all of his writings, Srimadva uncompromisingly opposed the Mayavadis, who confused the separate identities of the Supreme Person, the jivas, and material nature. He especially wanted devotees of Lord Vishnu to avoid any conjecture that Srimad Bhagavatam could be aiming at an impersonal, formless conception of the Supreme. Because Madhva and his followers were so staunch in their defiance of impersonalism, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose... I wonder if staunch is the right word there. Anyway, Jaya Vedamaj left it. You know what staunch is? We looked at snare. What's staunch? What is it? Yeah. Yeah, it means it doesn't leak. When the hull of a boat is well pitched, that means it has lots of pitch on it, then water doesn't get inside. That's staunch. So I don't know if staunch is the right word here. Madhvacharya doesn't mean he wasn't leaking. Yeah, anyway. Like I see, staunch devotional service means, undeviating. But staunch here doesn't mean, real fiery.
That's not what it's supposed to mean. Yeah, what does staunch say in the dictionary? Oh, could you get the microphone? Which dictionary?
Random House, Webster's, and Abridged Dictionary.
Oh, okay. He's got it.
Staunch adjective. Firm or steadfast in principle, adherence, loyalty, etc.
Okay.
As a person. So the first meaning. A staunch Republican, a staunch friend.
Oh.
Characterized by firmness, steadfastness, or loyalty. He delivered a staunch defense of the government. Strong,
yes.
Substantial, staunch little hut in the woods. Impervious to water or as a liquid. So it's all the way down to the bottom.
Well, let me
a staunch
look at
vessel.
Let me look at the Oxford English Dictionary, which looks at it historically. Oxford English Dictionary will give an old meaning first, even though it's obsolete.
This one gives the most modern meaning first. And it gives the absolute meaning down to the bottom.
Yeah. In the Oxford English Dictionary, looking at it historically, what it used to mean originally, impervious to water, not leaking, watertight. And that goes back to the 15th century, 1412. The ship was so staunch, it must no water laid. 1412.
It is an acceptable meaning of the word staunch, judging by this Random House Webster's. It's an American dictionary, too.
Oh, yeah. It's fine. It's just, historically, what it used to mean in the 15th century.
You could say unleaky.
Yeah, but okay. Unleaky, but it's okay to mean just steadfast, sticking to your principles. Okay. That's why Jayadevita Maharaj left it in there. Okay. Because Madhva and his followers were so staunch in their defiance of impersonalism, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chose to formally affiliate himself with their sampradaya by becoming a disciple of Sri Ishwara Puri, who was a great grand disciple of the eminent Madhvaitacharya Vyas Tirtha. Thus, out of deep respect for the founder Acharya of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, Srila Jiva Goswami here refers to him in the plural, Sri Madhvacharya Charanaih. Srimad Bhagavatam contains only the choicest substance, saram, carefully selected from all the Shrutis and Smritis. It embodies the essence of the mysteries of the Upanishads. It is the final, perfect fruit of the gradual revelation of Vedic thought through the phases of worldly rituals, demigod worship, and impersonal meditation. It is the source of divine light for all those willing to accept it in the present age of darkness. Srila Vyasadeva chose one of his numerous disciples, his own son Shukadeva, to receive this Bhagavatam. Shukadeva is like a parrot, Shuka, not only because he repeated perfectly what he had heard, but also because Srimad Bhagavatam became all the more relishable after emanating from his mouth. Just as a ripe fruit whose skin has been broken by a parrot's beak is sweeter, its pulp having become softer and more sugary. Shukadeva's meeting Parikshit and reciting to him the Bhagavatam was an act of sheer kindness to the unfortunate souls of Kali Yuga. The sages who assembled with Parikshit on the bank of Sri Ganga and those who surrounded Suta and Shonaka at Naimisharanya thus unanimously acknowledged Shukadeva as their spiritual preceptor for the single feat of speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. So there were two verses, but one of them was spoken by... the first one was spoken by Suta, and the second one was spoken by Shukadeva himself. No, I think it's also Suta, because it's later on in the 12th canto. Where is it? What chapter is it from? 13th, okay, it's also Sutta. All right, anyway. But they both mention, the first one mentions Shukadeva. Okay, anyway, comments? Yes.
How exactly did Shukadeva Goswami made it more sweet if he just repeated the same
Well, this is a
words.
Mysterious thing. It's actually been investigated by Western philosophers, at least those who are theologians, Christian theologians, who developed the philosophy branch called hermeneutics. They talk about translation in a very broad sense, not just translating from one language to another. The most elementary form of translation when it comes to spiritual scriptures, revealed scripture, is just to repeat the words. That's identified as the first form of translation. You just utter the sacred scripture. Just say it. You're not supposed to change it or add your own comments. Just recite. You add your realization to it. That's a form of translation. Then when you repeat it a long time in the future, a very ancient scripture, that's translation in time. And then when you actually change it to a different language, that's translation from one language into interlanguage translation. But just repeating a sacred text is an act of interpretation, just saying the words. You know, because your consciousness reflects itself on the text. Your hearers, people who hear from your mouth, are going to hear it as flavored by your consciousness.
Like somebody might quote a verse.
Yeah, and if he doesn't believe it, then the hearers aren't going to believe it.
Or somebody might go, Nigama kalpatohora galitam palam.
Yeah, it's not just the style, but it's the actual conviction in consciousness. So it's recognized in Western philosophy that just repeating sacred words is an act of interpreting them. Yes.
Just to illustrate the point, there was a recent research done by some psychologists just a few months ago, and they investigated the language, and they got groups of people, and they were given to hear statements or speech by other people from other cultures in the language that they didn't know at all, yes. not even a word. And they could actually figure out 60% of what the people said. It was just some colloquial conversations, yeah. But because of the emotional context of the speech, especially ladies were good at it. They could figure out what those other ladies in completely alien language meant.
Yeah.
And the message would get across, even though they didn't really have any translation, but because of the realization which is there, they could relate to it. 60%, which is not bad at all.
Okay. That's not always the case. I mean, I sit and listen to a class and some of the I can't understand a word of it, usually. I'm not good at that. Yes?
This example is generally quoted that previously, even before Srila Prabhupada went to West, the Allen Ginsberg was chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It's Allen Ginsberg, and he was promoting intoxication and illicit sex based on this as a background.
Yes.
So, but when Srila Prabhupada went and chanted Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it changed the whole world. He brought about a spiritual revolution. So this can be said as an example. The same mantra is being spoken by two different people and are completely opposite results it gives.
Yes, Bhavatam is special potency invested in the words of the Bhavatam to change the world. But it's going to change the world when someone with potency recites them or preaches them. If we shouldn't complain that we haven't taken over the world yet. It's our fault that we're not convinced. And it's not that we have to do anything else, but teach Srimad Bhagavatam, hear and recite Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll take over the world. And even if you want to do something else, better take over the world first. You know, you want to cook for Krishna or do something else, okay, but to create an environment in which you can cook nicely for Krishna, first of all, take over the world. And that's going to be done by hearing and chanting Srimad Bhagavatam. Then everything else you can do later. You know, the building is burning, the world's going to hell, and we're, you know, playing the fiddle. You know, this is, you know, frivolous to do anything but preach in such a situation. Okay, anything else? We're sitting here studying, but we have to do it in preaching consciousness because the world's going to hell, and what are we doing sitting here? We have to justify it. Okay.
You're taking me to Russia. I just read, you know, that it's the place is becoming, you know, totalitarian again. So the world's going to hell. Yeah. You know, it means you don't have real freedom. This is being recorded. Okay, we'll stop here for now. We'll continue on October 1st. Thank you, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sundar Bhakti Jaya.